If you're paying attention to the men's duty roster, then you know I'm about 3 weeks late for getting up here. Through a series of trades, I first traded with Jason and then realized that when I was back and I was supposed to cover for Jason then, because he covered for me, I had a work meeting, so then David covered for me, and now I'm here. The Lord works in mysterious ways, because if I had done this 3 weeks ago, it would have been a different message. So tonight I'd like for you to open up to Ephesians chapter 4. And I'm going to talk tonight about footholds. Over the past 10 days, I've had a couple of occasions to talk on this topic to others. And I figured it was as good a topic as any to present an invitation on. But wouldn't you know it, like I said, the Lord works in mysterious ways, and those scriptures are never wrong, right? And I find myself in the awkward position of speaking to myself, as many preachers often says they do, as I myself have said many a time from up here. But usually, I've had more distance and more remoteness from the thing that I'm preaching myself on. Maybe it's something that you know as a person that maybe it's something you struggle with and you need to study those scriptures and therefore learn your mind. And maybe it's not a present thing in your life, but it's something you know you need to remind yourself of, so you preach on it, and that's valid. Never before have I been so close to the issue that I then had to preach on. So I would ask that you bear with me, as I'm feeling a bit raw at the moment. Today I had a circumstance professionally that was genuinely unfair. And it'll probably have some effects on my career, long term. It's not written in stone, it's written in sand. But I've been around the military long enough to know the way things work, and I have a pretty good idea of how things will go from this path. And it's not that I've done anything wrong. I haven't. It's just it's a cutthroat meritocracy. And sometimes, you know, things just don't break the way you want them to. Ecclesiastes 9:11 says, "Again, I saw that under the sun, the race is not to the swift, nor the battle to the strong, nor bread to the wise, nor riches to the intelligent, nor favor to those with knowledge, but time and chance happen to them all." And you know, when time and chance happen to you, you might not have thought that would happen to you, and it can feel genuinely upsetting. But what matters is how we choose to act next, right? So this irony is not lost on me, that this message that I've been planning for several days to put before you, then just like that today, it's the message that I need to hear. Yesterday it could have stood before you and been cool as a cucumber, no hint of emotion or anything, and read these scriptures that I'm about to read to you and said these words, but tonight I stand before you a little bit raw still, as I said. So I've already spoken to the people that I need to about the specifics of the issue. I don't intend to get into the specifics of it. I just want you all to know where I'm coming from. I just don't have enough time to get into all of that. But Ephesians 4:26 and 27 reads, "Be angry and yet do not sin. Do not let the sun go down on your anger, and do not give the devil an opportunity." The New American Standard, which I just read from, and probably most other quality translations, use that word opportunity. In a rare turn of events for me, I actually really prefer the way the NIV translates this. It says foothold, and that's why I said foothold earlier. But the point in both of these is that a foothold is a place of leverage, a place to be taken advantage of. And I think it provides some excellent imagery for what the Lord, through the Apostle Paul, was trying to communicate to us here. When I think of the word foothold, there's two primary scenarios that come to mind. The first is that of an intruder putting their foot in your doorway, right? Open door. They're trying to prevent the occupant from being able to shut that door completely. The second I think of is that of a mountain climber who will use his foot to grab onto any supporting rock sticking out of an otherwise sheer wall of stone that they know or have confidence can support their weight, even for a brief moment. So we get this idea that footholds themselves are launch pads, right? They are intended to be advanced from. You do not remain static in a foothold. Someone with their foot in a door, they have it there not to keep it there, but to force the door open, wide. Foothold on a mountainside is not a resting place. It's where you put your foot so that you can spring up to the next higher spot with your hands and your arms and continue to ascend. So Paul's advice to us here in the scripture is to quite literally not even give Satan this launching point from which to make another attack or a real attack. So while a foothold might sound like a small thing, by a foothold, doors are forced open wide. And by a foothold or a series of footholds, entire mountains can be scaled, conquered, and flags placed atop them. And that's exactly what Satan does. Foothold by foothold, he conquers men's hearts. And it's almost never one big thing that leads us astray. Even when it might appear that way, I think if we're being honest, we can look back and see the trail of decisions we made or that someone else made that you knew that got Satan his very first foothold, right? And every subsequent one from there. And then what happens? The door is pushed open wide. The mountain is climbed. And willingly, truly, at that point, you fall right into that sin that you always wanted you to commit. In Genesis 4, verse 7, God tells Cain, "And if you do not do well, sin is crouching at the door. Its desire is for you, and you must rule over it." Now, I find it really interesting that God first says, "If you do not do well," almost as a separate thing from this idea of sin is crouching at the door, and its desire is for you. This is as if to say, in this case, that the "you do not do well," I think sometimes there's a temptation to look at that and say, "if you sin." Well, no, that's not what he said. He says, "if you do not do well." So I don't think that is referring explicitly to sin just yet, because if it did, then the sin would already have him. It would not be crouching outside the door, desiring him, right? So this, "if you do not do well," I'm led to believe that's the Lord referring to the potential, right? The potential. Cain had before him two paths laid out. He had the potential for good, potential for bad. He could make a foolish decision, or he could make a wise decision. It was his choice. He could have chosen between either one of those, and one of which would give Satan that foothold. The other would have outright denied him the opportunity to take a foothold, which could have then led to Cain sinning. And I think this idea is sort of the precursor to what David would write later in Psalms 4:4, "Be angry and do not sin. Ponder in your own hearts on your beds and be silent." And that's the source verse that Paul was quoting from that we already read in Ephesians 4:26. See, it's possible to experience raw emotions, even strong ones, typically associated with sinful behaviors like anger, and yet still not sin. So in this moment of being angry, Cain had the option to wisely separate from his brother until he could cool off. But that's not what he chose, is it? Verse 8 tells us that instead he went and spoke to Abel, and in so doing he foolishly gave Satan that foothold that he so desperately desired. Talking to Abel was not itself a sin, right? It was just a foolish decision. It created the opportunity that Satan was looking for to insert some sin into the equation. If Cain had not been in Abel's presence in this state of heightened anger emotion, he could not have murdered him. It's just logic. They would not have been around each other. He could not have done it. So it was this setup that enabled the circumstances for sin to happen. So now he's there and he's upset. And after talking, he rises up and kills his brother, as the scripture reports for us. And Satan won that round. Satan didn't have to win that round. It was not a foregone conclusion. But now that the circumstance existed for the sin first conceiving Cain's heart to actually happen, it was that much harder for him to resist the follow-through. And thus, Satan successfully advanced from this foothold in Cain's heart to full conceived sin and death. But it was the unwise decision that Cain made preceding the murder that allowed Satan to get into a position and do this. and tempt him on towards sin. And the Bible specifically relates this idea to anger, perhaps because when we're angry, most of us tend to behave more rashly. With that particular emotion, I think we are much more prone to be on what you'd call a hair trigger, so to speak, and quickly cross over from anger that's not inherently sinful to one that is. But I think the logic here can apply to any number of other scenarios. You know, David walked headlong into sin with Bathsheba and then again with Uriah. But the board was set for him to walk into those scenarios by the decisions he personally made long before he observed Bathsheba bathing on the roof. Had he behaved in a manner consistent with what was normal for kings in those days, and the scriptures point this out, that the kings in those days would go out onto the battlefields with their armies. David did not. That was a decision he made, a decision which left him with idle hands and an idle mind looking for other ways to fill his time when he should have been out with his army. Had he not taken a moonlight stroll on the roof, likely with the full knowledge of what he might see at that time of day, given the cultural practices of that time? Then again, he would not have found himself rushing headlong into temptation and then just hair's breadth away from sin, which he then willingly walked into. So if you're wise enough to know where your weak spots are, you can do your best to avoid situations where you might enter into struggle, right? Someone who struggles with drunkenness probably shouldn't be hanging out in places that serve alcohol. People who struggle with lust probably don't need to be watching the Summer Olympics or spending a lot of time in private spaces with devices that have access to the internet. That's just facts, folks. You don't need to do it if that's your struggle. And if you struggle with anger, you probably don't need to engage in conversation with people who frequently disagree with you on hot-button issues. That's just how this works. That's called wisdom, right? Apply it. And these things all sound like common sense. I know. When I say them right now, it sounds real easy. I'm not saying it's easy. It just sounds easy, right? But how often do we put ourselves in scenarios where Satan will have a much easier time grabbing a hold of whatever particular foothold your heart presents to him? We do it a lot, and we can be wiser. Christ in Matthew 5:29 tells us, "If your right eye causes you to sin, tear it out and throw it away. For it is better for you to lose one of your members, than that your whole body be thrown into hell." Now, I believe we all agree that Jesus didn't mean this literally. Otherwise, I'd imagine we'd have examples of the apostles and many first century Christians maiming themselves. We don't see that anywhere, right? Logic also tells us this, since, you know, in many cases, our mind is the thing that's causing us to sin and we have no means to remove our brain. Like, you just can't do that. Furthermore, if you gouge out your eyes, you can still commit lust in your heart. And a man without a tongue is still capable of thinking the most vile thoughts of hatred against his neighbor, even if he lacks the means to say it out loud. The point was never to cut off your tongue or your hands. It was to be willing to take drastic action to avoid sin when it's necessary, right? So if you're trying to avoid drunkenness, maybe you need to determine in your heart that you will no longer eat at any restaurants where alcohol is served on the menu, if that's what it takes. That might sound drastic when you try to explain it to somebody. No, I can't eat there. Sorry, they got beers on the menu. Not going to do it. You know, you get some weird looks from coworkers. You said that, and they invite you out to lunch. But if that's what it takes for you to avoid the sin, then I think that's what you're called to do. And by saying all this, I don't mean to suggest that we can simply avoid every temptation that's out there by thinking 2 to 3 steps ahead of Satan. He's much craftier than us, and that'd be a fool's errand to try it. In fact, my professional situation today caught me entirely out of the blue. It was not something I believe I could have taken any specific action to avoid. And in fact, I have many good reasons to believe that what happened to me never should have even been possible. Now, Christ tells us in Luke 17 that temptations to sin are sure to come. That's a fact. So we know that they are ultimately unavoidable. And that's why we can be wise big, we can be wise small, we can avoid as much as we can, but temptation is sure to come. Christ said it. And when those moments find us, we need to be still as wise as we possibly can muster. We need to go to the Lord in prayer. We need to go to the brethren. We need to go to the shoulders of people whom we know we can lean upon for encouragement. I chose to drive forward with this topic tonight because I know I have a choice before me. I know I could be like Simon in the gall of bitterness, but I choose not to. I know that ultimately those actions would never resolve anything. I know it would only leave me further dissatisfied. But I can work towards handling the situation in a righteous manner and hopefully benefit you all, my brethren, with a message that I hope encourages you to keep on keeping on. As we all walk side by side toward that crown of righteousness laid up for those of us who have loved the Lord's appearing. Brothers and sisters, let's not give Satan a foothold in our hearts. If you have a need this evening, whether that be for the waters of baptism or the prayers of the saints, please come forward as we stand and sing.